welcome to the Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. It is Sunday, September the 5th, 2021. On this edition of the Politocrat, see you in September, a potpourri of news and information that you should be aware of, and how we look at this month as we start the month with Labor Day here in the United States, just around the corner, tomorrow, as a matter of fact. Plus, a couple of other random things that you may be interested in. All of that coming up next.
Here's the deal with the recall of Gavin Newsom. We've seen Trump Republicans across the country attacking election results and the right to vote. Now they're coming to grab power in California, abusing the recall process and costing taxpayers millions. Here's how we stop them. Every Californian will get a mail-in ballot for the September 14th election. Vote no to protect California and our democracy. Stop the Republican recall.
Be alone each and every night. While you're away, don't forget to write. Bye-bye, so long, farewell. Bye-bye, so long, farewell. See you in September. See you when the summer's through. Oh, dearie. Welcome, dear listener, and welcome to this edition of the Politocrat Daily Podcast. I was actually singing a song called See You in September. It's originally recorded by the Tempos back in the, I think, in the mid to late 1950s. But this particular song that I was thinking of as I was singing it just now, what a horrible job that was. I'll stick to my day job, jobs. This particular version that I was thinking of was the one from, I think it was 1966, by a group called The Happenings. And The Happenings, I remember the song. I mean, it was really a catchy tune. You know, initially I thought the Beach Boys had sang that song, but they didn't. It was The Happenings. So I wanted to title this episode See You in September, because we already are in September, although you'd think that this would be the title of an episode done in August. But that's irrelevant. It's not important. It's just for me and my own idiosyncratic way, I guess. But See You in September, I love that song. And I normally like the month of September. It's one of the months that I actually think is one of my favorite months. But the problem is that all the bad things happen in September. You know, I mean, all the bad things happen any time of year, any day. But it seems like a lot of the not so good things happen in the month of September. Just think of September. Just in the news. I mean, I'm not even asking you to investigate your own life in the month of September and ask you, well, what's it like for you in September? I'm really asking you to think about September in the news and how that plays out. It's not played out very well so far, has it now? And we were only in the fifth day of the month. You know, I mean, goodness, Supreme Court, you know, hello. So, I think that was September 1st or 2nd, wasn't it? Wasn't that September 1st? I think it was, maybe the end of August. But the point is that September is, I have to stop talking about how that's this wonderful month. It's my favorite month of the year. And it's like, all these, how can it be your favorite month? But the point is, dear listener, and thank you again for your ear on this Sunday, because it's you are tremendously valued by yours truly. I do value you. I respect you. And I respect your time. And I try to not have these episodes run especially long. I fail miserably at that on a number of occasions. And I apologize. And I'm trying to get better at that. I'm working on it. And there are times lately where I've tried to truncate episodes and really bring them down to their essence. But I think that's also, there's many reasons why. I'm not going to make excuses, but there are many reasons why. Some of these topics do require a bit more, but I also need to be mindful, more mindful of your precious time. And I know that you've got lots of things you're doing, so that'd be mighty arrogant of me and egotistical of me and whatever else of me to sit here and, you know, wax on for 2 hours. That's not good. So self-indulgent and so self-important. Oh, dearie me. Come on now. I mean, there are levels of self-awareness that must be climbed. I don't know what level I'm on yet. I've still got a few levels to climb up. But dear listener, I do hope you're having a good Sunday. And I talked about that song, The Happenings, because a lot, the song by The Happenings called See You in September, which, as I said earlier, was sung first by the Tempos, T-E-M-P-O-S, the Tempos. And their version of it, even though theirs was the original version of it back in the 1950s, not as good as this 1966 version. The 1966 version is sunnier, and it does sound like something the Beach Boys would have done. If they did, maybe they recorded, I'm just not aware. And so you listen to that song, you can find it on the usual suspecting musical streaming platforms. It's a good song. I remember it back in the day, years ago. Oh, gosh. And it was a great song. I love that song. And I just hadn't listened to it for a long time. And I literally came across it. I thought, yeah, let's start with this. With me mangling the song, you know, that's a really great way to start a day. Or start an episode of a podcast. But I do thank you very much. And the reason why I've started with See You in September, because A, we are in September, as I was saying earlier, and The Happenings, who did that song, the second version of it, so really well, they presented this kind of innocence and optimism about things in the world. And, you know, this was a quartet or so of white men, so I guess they had reason to be optimistic in 1966. Which is just, you know, you know what I mean? You know, cities are on fire because, you know, the continuing racism and injustice in the country, you know, no, but we're very happy as white men, you know, projection of sunniness and optimism. And the Beach Boys did the same thing. Nothing's going on in the world, you know, except... Oh, dearie, dearie me, you know, but anyway... But I picked that song, dear listener. Gosh, I've rambled, haven't I? But here's what my point is. I picked this song because I think that the song projects an optimism and a longing and a sunniness, and, you know, there's a distance between this a particular woman who has, and you know, who's now away from home, and this guy is pining for her, and he's, Don't forget to write, and I'll miss you, and all this. But I'm trying to extend that to where we are. What is our distance from the country and what's going on in it? What is the distance from you and the country you live in and what is going on in it? Do you think that you are, or do you feel, thinking and feeling two very important things? Sometimes people criticize one, and sometimes people criticize the other. Sometimes people criticize both. And I guess my question for you on this Sunday is, how closely do you feel connected to events in the country you live in? And obviously here in the United States, but I mean to anybody, because there are people listening to me in other countries, in places all across the world. And I do get correspondence from people in various countries. And so I really think that this is something to extend to, not to extend, but to say to any listener who listens to me. And I thank you wherever you are listening to me from. And just ask you, do you feel connected to the events that go on in the country? Do you feel connected to the events going on in government? Do you think that the things in your life are being reflected in policy, in government? And if you do, what are those things for you? Obviously, this past few days in the United States, for example, the Texas law SB 8 has not been blocked by the United States Supreme Court, which means that the United States Supreme Court, which has six conservatives on it, six Republicans on it, and three Democrats on it, has opened up and paved the way now for a wholesale evisceration and turnover, repeal of Roe versus Wade. I mean, that's what is happening, and they're going to continue to do this. The Florida is going to do this, and the United States Supreme Court has no reason to know, say, oh no, we're not going to do this to you. You know, we're going to let, you know, they're going to do this with any state that wants to do it. So you're going to have a number of states across this country at the bottom line who are going to end up having people who cannot get women, who cannot get abortions. And so there's going to be all of this economic cost. There's going to be a psychological cost. There's going to be all of these things, physical costs, emotional costs. This is going to be really evil. It is evil. Doing this to women all over the country. So in that case, there's a great deal of connectivity to a news event or a happening, if you will, to quote the, you know, the name of the group, the happenings. There's going to be serious consequences. And yes, every single person who is female is going to feel not only hugely connected to these events, but troubled by them. I know that there are some women who are not pro-choice. They are against choice. They believe that you shouldn't be able to make decisions over your body if you're a woman. There are some women who feel that way, that you don't have a right to make those decisions over your own body. Well, there's women like that. So let's put that out there. A small number, but vocal and loud. Just like there are countless men out here who are all about, no, you're not going to do this, you're not going to do that. You know, except when they're having an affair with a woman, not their wife, and then they tell you, oh yes, you're going to get rid of, listen to this language. It's not my words. This is the words of some of these Republican male, white male politicians. You're going to get rid of that. Yeah, tell them the mistress that they're having it off with. You're going to get rid of that. And these are the same people who tell the mistress, you're going to get rid of that, who publicly are saying women can't choose. Women aren't allowed to choose. The hypocrisy just knows no bounds with that particular party of people. You know, I am disgusted by these people, but I am not surprised. And we've got to vote every last one of them out. So the United States is one example of, you know, that's a news story where people feel connected to it. A news story where I feel connected to things, for example, is the voting rights. And how, and I think everyone should be feeling connected to both of these stories, by the way. Because that story that I just talked about, the United States Supreme Court not getting in the way of taxes, affects every one of us. Every last one of us. First and foremost, women, of course. It's horrifying for women. It's a handmaid's tale for women. And this story affects all of us. Men, girls, women, boys. It affects all of us. It really does. And voting rights affects all of us too. Anywhere in the world, it affects all of us. All of these issues, these are very... And so that's one of mine. I mean, both of those issues are mine, you know. Both of those issues affect me particularly. I mean, both of them, these are very serious issues. Very serious issues. Oh my gosh, especially voting for me. Voting rights, if you don't have a say, I mean, it's both of these issues operate in the same way. If a woman doesn't have any say over her own body, what the heck is that? Well, I mean, I've just outlined what it is. Handmaid's tale, isn't it? But if you don't have any say over your body, you don't have any say over who's in charge of government and who's making decisions that affect you, your family, your, you know, people you know, people in general that you don't know, then what kind of world are you living in? I mean, that's really the seriousness of the whole thing, isn't it? So that's the issue, you know. I guess my general question is, do you feel connected to the news? Do you feel connected to things? Or is the news being presented to you in such a way that you tune out of it because it's about picayune BS and stuff that doesn't really affect you? It's about some, sorry, I'm picking on them, but I'm going to say it, celebrities. There again, I don't have anything against celebrities. I really don't. I don't. I know some people do. I don't have anything against celebrities. You know, I think celebrities, some of whom serve a really important function. And if you look back at the history of the United States, for example, celebrities have been, on a number of occasions, very integral to politics or very a part of politics. I mean, you have celebrities for good and for not so good, right? You have celebrities who get out there and protest and are activists, and today continuing to be activists. We've had a long history of activist, activity, if you will, in sporting events and in movies, and all this gone through American history, like it's integral to U.S. history. March on Washington, Sidney Poitier, James Baldwin, and Marlon Brando, and Charlton Heston, even back in the day when he had some kind of conscience, right? He's no longer here now. In fact, none of those people except for Sidney Poitier is still here, right? And the only other person that I can remember off the top of my head who is still here, there's a few more. Joan Baez, I think, was there. And Harry Belafonte was, I think, at the March on Washington as well. Yes, he was. So I think he spoke at the March on Washington. So a number of people were there. So there are still some people who are still very much alive. So forgive me. But, you know, the activist tradition has been rooted. There's been a lot of celebrities who are in that and have done this for such a long time. And I think it's really important. And, you know, that's something. And then the celebrities who haven't, who've been on the other side of things, a force for evil, right? For not good. Like Reagan, who was a celebrity. He started out Ronald Reagan as a celebrity. He was an ad pitch man. He was a B-movie actor, as they called it, B-movies. In other words, crap movies, exploitation movies, starring white actors. See, when it's black movies, when it's black people in movies, you know, when the movies are really exploitative, they call them blaxploitation. But they don't call them white exploitation when it's a movie that exploits women and, you know, white women, and there's all these really, you know, racist things in there. They don't call that racist or white exploitation movie. They call it B movies. the they meaning the white intelligentsia and systemic function that puts all this together, B movies, as opposed to F movies. You didn't call them F movies, but you call them B movies. So wait, A is like some really good stuff. I can't think of them. On the Waterfront is an A, for example, and B is Ronald Reagan. No, that's a freaking F. Ronald Reagan's a freaking F. You know, that is not, it's not B. And I would say, yeah, it's a white exploitation movie, but ooh, we can't say that, can we now? God, please. Anyway, that's a whole other thing. So there, you know, then there's, like I say, celebrities who are engaged in toxicity. Like, you know, I don't want to give them any airtime. You see them on Twitter. You know who they are. You know who they are on Twitter. You see who they are. You know who they are. So I'm not going to go there, you know, but you get the idea. So do you think the news is like that? It's all this celebrity stuff that you don't care about. Don't you see that on your timeline on Twitter? Don't you see that on your timeline? If you're into that, then ooh, bully for you, woolly bully. Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs, right? I mean, woolly bully to you if you like that. I like to clear that off my timeline, thank you very much. Stuff that's really useless. Oh, someone dropped their iPhone in a gutter. Celebrity X dropped their cell phone in a gutter. Woe is me. And it gets 3,000 retweets or something. Okay, I'm just exaggerating. But you know what I mean. But do you feel like that with the news, is my point? Do you feel that a lot of the news you're getting is puff and fluff? Well, I do. My Gregory Peck voice, just horrible. But that's No, it's from Cape Fear. A third straight episode, I think, I've mentioned Cape Fear from 1962. And Gregory Pat, that's incredible, isn't it? And really by chance, because as you know, I do this unscripted all the time, every day. This is unscripted. Maybe that's not a good thing, but maybe it's not served me too badly. But yeah, it's this. Do you feel like that with the news? Do you feel disconnected from it? Do you think the news is representing your thoughts and feelings about things? Because if you're not making the news, and I don't mean you being in the news because you've done something great or something really embarrassing that you wouldn't tell your friends or your family or your parents. But do you think that the news itself is just really useless? I mean, honestly, I'm just trying to think about where you might stand on this, dear listener, because for me, I think that a lot of the news now, because who's shaping the news? You know, it's not you or me. It's some corporate meister who, if you watch the corporate news media, has deemed this coverable, but not that. That coverable over there, but not this over here. That coverable over back in the backyard, but not the one that's coverable, that should be coverable, that's right in front of you. And that's how that happens. So I think the answer to that is to have our own news gathering information sources and go to media where your voice is going to be represented and your stories are going to be represented and your interests in the news are going to be represented, is going to be represented. The black press, black-owned press. You know, there are people out here who have been doing that. The white progressive media. I think a lot of that has been also of note and use, whether it's Free Speech TV and Tom Hartman and Randy Rhodes, to name a few. There's the Black Eagle. Speaking of black media, not owned by, but SiriusXM is not owned by black people, but SiriusXM gives a platform to people like Joe Madison, who you may know, you may if you watched it last week and the March on Washington. Joe Madison was the MC of the event. So if you hadn't seen Joe Madison ever, you would have seen him, and you can look on C-SPAN on this, on August, C-SPAN.com or C-SPAN.org, I think, for August the 28th, 2021, and you can see what Joe Madison looks like. You don't even have to do that. You can go to Twitter and Madison SiriusXM, and Sirius is spelled SiriusXM, right? SiriusXM, Madison SiriusXM. And you can see what Joe Madison looks like. Joe Madison's been in, he was at the March on Washington in 1963. So he's been there, man. My Al Pacino here. Scent of the Woman, which for me, I think is an awful movie. I know a lot of people love Scent of a Woman and it's sentimental and cute. I like sentimental movies, but not that one. I think it was really poor. It wallowed in its own sense of self-importance. But Al Pacino goes, I've seen men like these, bigger than you, bigger than these, younger than these. I'm just getting warmed up. Oh, you got to forgive me, dear listener. It's that kind of September day. it's going to be one of those kinds of episodes where it's stream of consciousness. So in my homage to the one, the only, late, magnificent Robin Williams, it's going to be that kind of an episode. I'm just warning you. I mean, although Robin Williams, oh man, we lost a really good person there. I met him 3 different times. Really kind person, and he struggled. You know, he struggled, and so many people in the world struggle with severe depression. And here I go. You know, I've kind of segued away from what I was talking about, but I'm going to bring it back to where I want to go to. And, you know, September, you know, all these months, these months weigh heavily on so many of us, and we're struggling to find our place in the world, I think. And that's why I asked you about the news. Because the whole thrust of all of this is, where is your place in the world? And you hear that siren. I mean, there you go. If you can't think that there aren't things connected in the universe, there's an example of it. As you just are hearing right now. You know? You know? Yeah, sirens, alarm bells should be going off for you. How connected are you to the world? When I ask this question about the news, right? Because you've got to find, there are so many important places to go for news. And whether it's Joe Madison on Sirius XM, whether it's Free Speech TV and Tom Hartman and Randy Rhodes and persons of that ilk, or whether it's other persons who do really good content on the news, you need to find your place in the world. And if you're not reflected in the news, what then? It's not really good, is it? My answer to that is not make news by doing something crazy or stupid. It's make news in a way that's positive. But we have to, and if you find that you are not represented in the news, then the answer is to get together with people who are like-minded and create a news source, a news entity, and have a newsletter distributed. People do this all the time now. We have the means and the tools. Substack, you know, look, I've got a newsletter now. It doesn't go out every single day. But for this podcast, you know, and create news, aggregate news. Don't create news out of whole cloth. That's not what I'm talking about. But put together news stories that reflect your, not just your viewpoint, really, but what's really going on in the world. You know? What's really going on in the world? Reflect those news stories so that your viewers, listeners, are informed, because they're watching MSNBC and they're watching Fox. Oh my God. And they're watching CNN and Fox. Certainly Fox, forget Fox. You know, they're not even a news channel. Come on now. And all the rest of those in that right wing, they're no freaking news channel. They're not news channels. You know, come on now. Whether it's CNN or MSNBC, as good as many people think those stations are, they're not covering some very important things, or they're not covering them in the way you'd like to see them, or the conversation around those news stories ain't very good. So, hey, we can sit here, for those of you who still watch those networks, you can sit and complain and talk on Twitter, or you can tweet on Twitter, or you can call up someone at MSNBC or CNN and complain, well, why are you talking about this, and why are you spending time talking about that, and your pundits suck, and this and that and the other, but then what do we do? I mean, yes, it's good to let them know, and I've been an advocate of that for a long time here, but we've also got to start doing things. Because, again, the corporate entities are going to do what they do. What are we going to do? What kind of news are we going to create and aggregate and put out there? You know, there are people right now on Twitter who are doing this really good work, you know, who have newsletters out every day or every week on Twitter. I don't even remember the names of all these people, but you can find them. You probably follow some of the folks, and they put together news that's real. They didn't create it in terms of making it up on the fly. They went and investigated stories. Sometimes they've reported on these stories, and they put all this stuff together for you to consume. Because I think sometimes the news has a political bent to it. When I say political bent, I'm not talking about, well, what happened on Capitol Hill today, or what happened at number 10 Downing Street today. I'm talking about the way that news is tailored, the way that news is phrased, the way that the New York Times and other papers of record headline write. And when you go on Twitter and you see something from the New York Times, by the way, and the headline on the tweet says something really whack, and you're like, what the blankety blank is this? And then you comment on it to all your followers, right? You tell them, my goodness, how can you phrase a headline like that? The New York Times is not the only offender. There are many of them, who they just put these stories out there, and you're saying, my goodness, that is whack. You cannot phrase that in that manner. And yeah, that happens all the time. But what if we were to put together a news aggregation service or report on events that aren't being reported on? What if we did that? I think it would be a good start. I really do. So, I mean, I wanted to begin with asking you about the news, how it connects to your life. Do you feel connected to the news stories that you read about, watch, listen to? You know, do you feel connected to that? And if you do, what kinds of things are those things that are being reported that reflect how you feel about things? And not only that, do you like the analysis that's being done on these news stories? Because I think some of the analysis, I can tell you, I'll put my hand up right now. You can't see me putting it up, but I am raising my hand right now, and I'll hold my hand up. I do not think that a lot of these stories, when the news analysis gets done on them, I don't think it's very cogent. I don't think it's very good. It's cogent, but I don't think it makes a lot of sense. Or I should say, it doesn't go deep enough. And I'll go back to Bonnie Greer from yesterday. Ooh, okay. See, maybe that's the sound of agreement. I said the news, I don't think the analysis goes deeply enough, deep enough. And then you just heard. I tell you, that's two for two now. First it was the siren, and then it was that sound that you just heard, that alert sound. Anyway, dear listener, I know. I've been all over the map today, but you know, I don't know. Do you think the news reflects how you feel, and do you think that the news is really on target with what's going on in the world? And are we only hearing about the stories that are overwhelmingly negative? And yeah, I mean, that's obviously a rhetorical question, but you know, I think that we need to hear about stories that are positive. And that's where you and I come in. We should do an exercise, do some homework. I mean, I'll do some of this too, and I'll start to put these in the newsletter when I next put one up, which is reflect some more positive stories, stories where people are doing some really good things in the world. That's not to say that we shouldn't focus on the very important issues like what the Supreme Court did or did not do last week, or voting rights, where I think a lot of people, some people in the Democratic Party have been really wanting. They've been wanting for this. They've been left wanting, you know, not done enough. By the way, we've got to put pressure on them to do enough, to do more. But the point is that the Republicans are there eviscerating voting rights, and the Democrats, some of them, are just going, yeah, I want the Senate to survive. The Senate has had a 200 plus year history of eviscerating anything that helps black folk. Filibuster, filibuster, filibuster. I don't want to get rid of the filibuster because that's going to destroy the Senate. Never mind you black folk over here. Yeah, the Senate's going to just destroy, you know, the Senate's going to be destroyed. Yeah, maybe that's not a bad thing, because we need senators who actually care, who are going to fight. I'm not for destroying government. I'm simply saying we need to get new senators in, and that's where you and I come in, because next year, 2022, there are midterms, and in these midterms, there are 35 U.S. Senate seats up for grabs. And on those 35 Senate seats, 20 of those running are Republicans. We need to vote every last one of them out, 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 out. And we need to put Democrats in there, and then we need to keep challenging the Democrats to do the right thing. That's how this works. It's not yay team. It's not any of that. It's about your issues and are they being represented. I mean, yes, I vote with one party, but that does not mean I'm not going to criticize them when they let me down, or when they do something that is anathema, or when they do something that is wrong. Because this is about right versus wrong, and right and wrong. It's not about these two parties, left and right, and I'm going to be on the blue team or the red one. Well, I'm definitely not going to be on the red team. That ain't going to work. But like I've been saying, you don't just support your side when they do bad things. You criticize them. If you care about them, you will tell them, hey, look, you know, your shoelaces are undone here. You need to tie these up and do better, right? You're not going to just let them run with their shoelaces undone, are you? Well, maybe you would, because, you know, you go to certain cities in this country, the U.S., they don't care. They'll see someone with some their, you know, their shirt hanging out or their fly undone by accident. Nothing perverse. And they'll just walk and they'll see you and they won't say anything. Maybe you've done that. Maybe it's happened to you, right? You walk down the street. Oh, you realize, oh my gosh. But you don't realize it until you've been out and about for about an hour. And then you're suddenly in the supermarket and you bend down to pick up that, you know, that leaf of that cabbage that you wanted to pick up, that whole, I forgot what you call those now. The not leaf of cabbage, but you know, that the whatever of cabbage, and you bend down and pick it up. Oh my God, my fly is undone. And you realize, oh my, then you quickly pull it up. And you realize, oh my God, I've walked all over creation. And my fly's been undone all this time. And nobody said anything. Oh, I'm so embarrassed. And waves of embarrassment and shame come across your face. You may even blush. But that's the truth, right? And some people will just let you just walk down the street. Oh, their fly's undone. And then maybe the people who do this, right, go, well, maybe they're doing that deliberately. And maybe they're trying to be a pervert. Maybe they're trying to be this. So I'm not going to alert them about their fly being undone. So I'm just not going to say anything. And then you go for an hour. I've had this happen to me. I don't know about you. But then you realize, oh my gosh, I've been walking all this time. And I went on a subway train. I sat down and nobody said anything. And I was like, I wondered why they were looking at me so funny. I was like, what? But that is what happens, right? Anyway, oh dear, I think I need to take a break, don't you? Welcome back. And dear listener, you do mean everything to me. I really do appreciate and respect you as a person. Now, I don't know where you are in the world right now when you listen to this, or as you listen to this. I know that people across the world do listen to the Politocrat Daily Podcast, and I want to thank you very much for doing so. Of course, you know that there is a store called the Politocrat Daily Podcast Store, and it's located at the-politocrat.myshopify.com. You can go there and purchase merchandise, and there's new merchandise coming over this holiday weekend here in the United States, so please stay tuned. Check out the store. I really do appreciate you doing that, but I also want to let you know that I am giving away another book coming very soon, and I hope that you will participate in the book giveaway that I will be doing here on the Politocrat Daily Podcast online store. And I will also announce that very shortly. So it's, I think, the final book of, since the summer is pretty much over now, you know, summer does not officially end until, I guess, nearly 3 weeks from now, around September, actually 2 weeks from now, September 20th, 22nd, 21st, somewhere around there. That's only just over 2 weeks from now. I mean, summer's basically gone, and many people look at the Labor Day weekend and Labor Day itself as the end of summer, which, you know, essentially is kind of true, but not entirely true. But it is pretty much true. but that will be my final summer in quotes giveaway, because it's to say thank you to people. It's to say thank you for listening. It's to say thank you for your continuing loyalty to this particular podcast. There's billions of podcasts on the planet now, you know, and you can listen to as many as you listen to. And I appreciate that one of them happens to be the one that you're listening to right now. Thank you. That means everything. And as I've said many a time, I am not looking for people to offer me compliments. I actually would rather look for people who say, oh, I don't like that show. I didn't like this show. I didn't like that show. You should do. I would look for that. I'd look for suggestions more than I would anything else, or constructive criticism, really, quite frankly. I mean, hey, listen, don't get me wrong. I do like when people do say nice things, and I believe they're genuine when the way they say it, because otherwise they wouldn't take the time to, right? But my compliment, as far as I'm concerned, the compliment that I have or that I get is the one where you don't have to say anything because you're listening. That's the compliment, that you're listening, right? So obviously you must be half decently interested in what you're hearing, and you might possibly like the podcast if you continue to listen to it. So I do appreciate that. For me, that's the compliment. That's me. Simple pleasures, you know. I do look that. But again, when people say things, that's very nice as well. And I thank those of you who have been so kind and been open and very kind and very in and just saying nice things. Because nice things are always good, right? You know, they're always good. Who wants to say bad things? I laugh at myself when I say that because, of course, this podcast talks about all the bad things. But you know what? I also try, and not to be in preemptively defensive mode, but I am, to offer some solutions about what we can do to change some of this. You know, we're not going to be able to change every single thing, and we're not going to be able to change it all at once or even in a generation, quite frankly. But we have to take those strides to do this. I mean, we can't just sit here and just let the world go by. You know, I see these stories about, oh, I feel like I should surrender. And there are people who do feel that way, dear listener. Maybe you, maybe, I don't know. But there are people who've given up. There are people who are resigned to their fates. But, and there may be many reasons for that. There may be all kinds of things going on in their personal private lives that have brought them to that point. So I'm not saying this as a modicum of pity. I'm just saying this as a real, actual, genuine fact and an acknowledgement that there are people who are at breaking point. And one of the things I like to say, because it's the truth and this is the way I feel, is that you're going to make it through. I know that this must be so tough. I've got no idea what you or someone is going through right this second as you listen. But I'm here to tell you that you are going to make it through. It's going to be difficult. It's probably unbearably painful and difficult. But you are here. And the fact that you are here means something. And it means something to me. And I want you to stick in there. Hold on. Keep going. I know it's difficult. I know it's easy for someone, you know, like myself to go, oh, hold on. But I genuinely mean that. This is not some happy clappy talk. This is someone who really does care about you and about you getting through these tough moments in life. Because we've all gone through things, some of us much more painful than others. So I do want to take the time here to mention that. And I have done before, but I think it's important to keep doing that. Because people are affected. You do not know who your words will reach. I've had people contact me and tell me that they have been profoundly affected and have been very thankful. Again, I'm sorry to talk about myself here, but I've had people contact me and say that. So it's really important. And this is, and that's not the reason why I'm doing this. I've been doing this for a long time. And even before I started this podcast, this is the kind of person I've always been. Because I just think it's important. I mean, like, for example, here's a story. This happened just yesterday, by the way. I wasn't even going to talk about this. But now, because I am in this kind of stream of consciousness mood today, I'm going to talk about this. I was at a grocery store here in San Francisco just yesterday, for example. And the cashier was there, black woman. And I said to her, you know, how was your day? I say this with any cashier anyway. There's a reason why I mention her race and I mention all of this. I asked her, how's your day going? Oh, it's not too bad. It's going pretty well. Thank you very much. Well, how have people been treated? And I told her, this is what I want. I'm very specific about how I want things done, as you could tell. So I told her, this is what I want. And she thanked me for the communication, for being so clear with her about how I wanted these things arranged and bad and everything else. And I think by the time she had been done with it, and I had helped her as well, but by the time that we had completed this task, I had asked her, you know, I just wanted to ask you, how are you being treated here? How are people treating you? Because this grocery store, as so much of San Francisco is predominantly white. And so I decided, you know, and I've done this on occasion, but on this occasion, I decided to ask This is the first time I've done asked this in a while because I hadn't come across many black cashiers here in San Francisco. There aren't very many, at least where I go. And there's only one San Francisco neighborhood, maybe two, that I can think of that has a sizable black population. Overall, the population of San Francisco, the percentage of black people here is around 6% or less. Maybe 5.5%. It's really low. It was not always that way here, dear listener. San Francisco's population percentage for black people used to be a lot higher in the 1950s and 60s. And then that's when, in the late 1950s, the pushing out of black residents from the Fillmore, from all these places in San Francisco began. And then that's why I keep asking you, one of the reasons I ask you to watch the film Take This Hammer. It's a documentary that came out in 1963, featuring James Baldwin, directed by Richard Moore, member of the Global Moore family. Well, who knew? And it's the director's cut, which is an hour long. You can find it. I've tweeted out on the at the popcorn REEL on Twitter, and I think I'll do that again on this particular Sunday, and I will put that in the newsletter. I have already put it in a previous newsletter, so you can be sure to subscribe to the newsletter at politocrat.substack.com, right? Please do that, because I put a link in, I think, the last newsletter containing the link to that hour-long director's cut of the documentary Take This Hammer, and you've got loads of black people that James Baldwin manages to speak to. You can't find loads of black people now in San Francisco unless you go to, I guess, Hunter's Point, and even there, that neighborhood is beginning to change, and Bayview is beginning to change as well. It's gentrification central, man. I mean, all San Francisco is, the whole world is. There's places, all London has changed like that too. All New York has. All over the world this has happened. And this is about power. It's about politics. It's about Monet. It's about money. It's about all kinds of things. And it's about kicking us, black people, out. Right? And it's not even white flight. Well, white flight still exists, but now it's white returns. I don't know. But no, seriously, but look, I'm not trying to stray away here because I'm going to come back to the cashier that I spoke to. And I asked her, how are they treating you here? How have you been treated here? Are people treating you decently? Are they treating you nicely? That's what I asked her. And she seemed to appreciate the question. And she goes, well, let me tell you, I don't allow them to do anything like that. I love it, you know? They're not going to get away with that with me. That's what she said. The tone of voice was mine, but the words were hers. They're not going to get away with that with me. I will not allow it. And I just love that, you know, because that's what we should be. We shouldn't be tolerating this nonsense from people. And these people come up to us, disrespect, talking stuff. You don't even know me. And then they come up to you. Like, you know, like they own you or something. Like they still think they're in 1860. You know? Well, maybe some people would say 1952. Or some people might say 2021. But then they come up to you like they think they own, you know? Like, what? Really? Get a grip. So I really liked that. And she said, well, you know, they treat... She didn't. She... My microphone just flew away, but oh dear. Fear not, the microphone's okay. See, this is truly the stream of consciousness episode. I promised that it would be, and I'm gonna just get myself reestablished here, and in just a moment. So you know, I mean, see, this is what happens when you tell these stories about cashiers. And here we are again. So maybe you've noticed the difference, maybe you've not. But here's the thing, right? Is she never really answered my question. I mean, she did and she didn't. She answered the question by saying, well, you know, well, I'm not going to allow that. But that doesn't necessarily mean, or maybe it does to you, that people haven't tried to treat her in a not nice way. Right? And she just said, you know, thank you for asking me about that. I really appreciate that you asked me. So people do want to. And she even said to me, look, my name is, she gave me her name. I introduced myself to her. And she said, come back and see me. And she meant in the context of seeing her at the checkout, not anything else. You dirty, dirty lot. But I don't know, maybe she, I don't think she meant that. And I'm not, come on now. But that is someone who says, thank you for seeing me. Thank you for talking to me. Thank you for interacting with me. And this is not an idle story because, as you know, if you've been listening to this podcast long enough, if you've been listening to the last few episodes particularly, I've been talking about this. I've been talking about how we don't go through process anymore in this country or in many other countries, right? This is true of anywhere now because we are no longer in the manufacturing age, at least in the vast majority of the world. I mean, there's still places in the world, obviously, that manufacture things, right? But here in the United States, the manufacturing age has gone, is dead. It's finished. It's the technological age now. It's the automation age. And as I said yesterday or the day before now, I forget which day it was. These things every day. I don't remember what day. But I think it was Friday's episode. I was talking about this, about how process is invisible now. Process is eviscerated by technology. We don't go to these, you know, automations of eviscerate technology. We don't go to cashiers, many of us now. If there's a choice between a cashier and a self-service, many of us go to the self-service. And it's about time. I don't have time. I don't want to wait with five people in the line. I don't want to wait with three people ahead of me. I don't want to wait with one person. I want to go to this line. Oh, there's no one at the self-service. Boom, I'm going there. And maybe your life is that busy where you don't have a second to waste. And I hear you. You may have three kids. You may have all kinds of obligations. You may have whatever. And when I say you may have three kids, I'm talking about men and women and people overall. I'm not targeting that at one gender. Right? You may have all kinds of things on your schedule you've got to get to. So you just say that. F it. Here's the self-service. But my whole thing is, that's someone's job that's lost. That's someone's livelihood that's lost. That's someone's family who's struggling now because they don't have that job anymore because they've been laid off to a machine that you're self-servicing. Oh no, that sounds really... I just realized that actually sounds like... Use your imaginations, everybody. I'm not going to go any further. I'm trying to keep this podcast, and though I have struggled, I have tried to keep this podcast PG. A machine that you're self-servicing. I don't have to say anything else. Your imaginations can do the rest, right? But this is the thing, dear listener, is the process is gone, right? And so, talking to that cashier at that certain grocery store was something that was important because that had an impact for that particular cashier. That particular cashier, a black woman, you could tell, I looked at her and looked in her eyes. She seemed happy about that. And I wondered, I got to thinking, how many other people had a real conversation with her? How many other people during her shift were going to have that kind of conversation? I'm not trying to puff up myself here, but I'm just talking about this on a generic level. How many times a day does any cashier, but particularly this one, as a black woman in a predominantly white area, right? How many people are coming up to her and asking her, how was her day? And I'm not just talking about, hi, how's your day? I'm talking about, hi, how are you? How are you doing? You know, how's your day going? And, you know, real stuff. Not this surfacey stuff that we all do. We do all the surfacey stuff, right? Every day. But checking in with someone for 5 minutes. You're there for 3 minutes, 4 minutes, depending on how much you bought at the grocery store, right? You're there for 3 minutes, 5 minutes. back in the stuff. You're back in it, packing it in, right? And you, this is your one chance. It's like Eminem, right? You've got one shot. this opportunity comes once in a lifetime. You know, that's the song Lose Yourself, which actually I like. It's a good song. Eminem is not a terrible rapper. Whatever else people might say about Eminem, he is not a terrible rapper at all. He's actually quite good, I think. I wouldn't call him one of the best rappers in the world, but I actually think he's good. I think he's one of the few white rappers that I think actually is good at what he does. I don't think he's bad. You know, I don't know how you feel about that. You may not care about rap. I'm not even a big fan of rap. I know rap's got longer origins than Eminem. That's what I know. But again, here I go. Stream of consciousness. All over the place. But the thing is, dear listener, and thank you for putting up with the wildness, the unpredictability, is that particular person. I wonder how many people really did come up to her and ask her, are they treating you well? How are you feeling? Is management treating, you know? Frontline workers have gone through hell. San Francisco, again, I want to talk about this really briefly again. San Francisco Giants, concessions workers are thinking of going on strike because they've not been treated well. Their pay is crappy. What else is new about these kinds of jobs that don't pay well because these companies who are multi-billion and trillion-dollar companies don't care about the workers and want to make a cheap buck off them, another unnecessary profit off of them. And then COVID, and some of these folks at the concession stand who work for the San Francisco Giants have been sick from COVID because people are not adhering to the San Francisco Giants masking policies and vaccination policies. And so you've got 30 people or so that have been sick with COVID. And the Giants, I don't know. I don't know what's going on with that. But the workers are not happy at the Giants. And the Giants need to do better. That's a team I'm a big fan of. Baseball team here in San Francisco that is really locked in a titanic fight right now for the division in the major leagues of baseball, the National League West. I know no one really cares about that. Listen to this. But at least one of us does. But the thing is that look at the way they're being treated by the Giants. You know, that's not a good look for the Giants. The Giants, they do better. And so in the same vein, frontline workers have been tremendously crapped on and been disrespected, to say the least, by their company and by the general public. There's a lot of people in the general public who do respect and care about frontline workers, and then there's this loud 30% that don't give a rat's about them. And you're here to serve me. And that's the way they look at it. You know, they're the ones that destroy the hotel room and crap all over the place and then leave the maid, or maids plural, to clean everything. And then don't even tip the maid when they leave the room. They leave the room in a friggin' shambles. And this is rich people. There's all kinds of people that do this. Mostly rich people. Some of them are celebrities. Oh, I've got some stories for you that I'm not going to tell. Oh, no. I'm sworn to secrecy and I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to violate that kind of trust or confidence because I'm not. But use your imagination. But the thing, again, frontline workers are not respected. They're not respected. And I think that's true all over the world. And Richard Trumka passed away last month. The AFL-CIO president, a union guy, a working stiff, he cared about workers. He cared. So many people, so many of us care about the worker. And the poor souls, man, they've got families to feed. They got this to do, that to do. They're working three jobs, four jobs. I know people who are working three and four jobs, for goodness sake. Goodness gracious me. And they tell me, this is no joke, man. Their whole life their whole freaking day is work. Three jobs, four jobs. I am not joking, folks. Here in the US, and probably in your country too. Maybe you're going through this perhaps yourself. And your life ain't your own, mate. is what I'm saying. So, this is no joke. This is no joke at all. It's rough out here. It really is. Oh my God. But, you know, again, I think as rough as it is, you're built to get through this and you're going to make it through. And to that cashier yesterday, I hope that you continue to stand tall like you are amidst all these people who do not care. Now, there's lots of people who do care, and fair play to all of them, right? And that's really good. We need more people like that and less of the other kind of people who will just go, you know, won't say a word if they do frequent the cashier, won't say anything, you know, really? Your life is that empty? You can't say it. I mean, it's like, okay, it's like me saying, damned if you do, damned if you don't. If you don't go to the self-service, you might be one of those people who has a conversation with the cashier, or you might be one of those people who goes to the cashier and says nothing. You know, you got your AirPods in your ears, or you're just like, you're more concerned about what's going on your iPhone. You know, no connection. Dead souls. And listen, if you are someone who has a disability of some kind, then of course I'm not talking about you, right? I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about these able-bodied folks, right, who don't give a rat's about anything, barely themselves, and they're so dead, as James Baldwin would say. They're so dead inside. Oh, God. It's painful. And we're living in the richest country on the planet. And they don't care. And that's what the richest country has done. It's hollowed you out, mate. It's hollowed you out. You got no feeling. You got no soul. You got no connection. You got no nothing. And yet you got all this money. But you're dead inside, mate. Now you can't have that. And what's that? Empty vessel life, isn't it? So then what are you doing? And then you go out and then you commit violent acts against women. Or women in your home. Or the women who share your home. Or the women whose home it is. What is this? Gosh, soulless. And we've got to do better, mate. And that's not just here, that's everywhere. When I come back, I'm actually going to talk about some news stories, but I'm going to go through them rapid fire. So get your ears plugged in. I'll be right back.
Here's the deal with the recall of Gavin Newsom. We've seen Trump Republicans across the country attacking election results and the right to vote. Now they're coming to grab power in California, abusing the recall process and costing taxpayers millions. Here's how we stop them. Every Californian will get a mail-in ballot for the September 14th election. Vote no to protect California and our democracy. Stop the Republican recall.
Welcome back. So I am going to go through some of the news stories that you actually do need to know about, I think you need to know about, in various parts of the planet. Let me start with this one from the Guardian newspaper in the UK, actually from the Observer newspaper in the UK. Toby Helm wrote this today. The title is Elections Bill is a Power Grab to Rig Polls in Favor of Tories. Now, where have we heard that before? So now this is in the UK, and I talked about this a few weeks back that, you know, the Tories, Boris Johnson and the Tories, are trying to cut down your ability to vote and limit it to the less than 2% of people who voted in the Conservative Party leadership conference, the Conservative Party leadership campaign in 2019. You know, seriously, less than 3% or 2%. I mean, literally, I'm not joking. Now they want ID, voter ID. Now, where did you hear that from before? If you are in the US, rings a bell. So, charities and unions slam move as an attack on fundamental rights. And what's happening is that, rightly so, we have organizations and charities like Save the Children Greenpeace, which of course is a independent campaign group, activist group, and all those in the trade unions movement who are condemning this elections bill legislation that is going to be debated about in the House of Commons this week. And there's going to be a vote on it. The second reading of the bill is already going to be voted against by the Labour Party. Good on you, Labour, for doing the right thing here. And, you know, this is a nightmare bill. This is a nightmare bill. We've already had that police protest. I mean, this is so obvious what they're doing. I mean, the police protest bill that says, you can't protest. If anybody objects, you have to stop your protest. If anybody objects, I mean, some kid down the street can say, I don't like it. And you have to shut the protest down. I mean, this is advancing to an authority. I tell you, the UK now, under these Tories, has become an authoritarian state. It is heading that way. It is that way, some would already say. It is heading to a totalitarian existence under your Boris Johnson. The Brexit thing was one of the first signs of it. I know it's happened before that, but Brexit was one of the key signs, right? Now, you know, seriously, MPs being murdered. I mean, hello, Joe Cox. I mean, people just don't remember their history. And that was 5 years ago. That wasn't 28,000 years ago. But again, that is a really worrying thing. And people in my native land have got to wake up and start fighting back here and raise your voices, please. You know, I guarantee you all these people who are marching down the street saying, oh, I want freedom. Oh, I don't want to wear a mask. All these people in London and all these people in various parts of England who are going, various other parts of England going, oh, I want freedom. Oh, I don't want to wear a mask. I don't want to get vaccinated. Those people are not going to be in protest against Boris Johnson's government that is telling people that, no, you have to show 15 IDs, right? You have to show this particular kind of ID to vote, right? This is going to discriminate against black folk and poor white people and various other people, right? But these anti-vax and all this lot, the ones that are going through Shepherd's Bush Market and Shopping Centre, right? And Westfield Shopping Centre there in Shepherd's Bush in West London and talking about, oh, my freedom's taken away. I guarantee you those folk are not going to be at the protest against Boris Johnson's government taking away voting rights. The same people that go, oh, vaccine passports, where will it end? I bet you those people are not going to be at the protests that say, why are we showing ID to vote? Where is it going to... I bet you their asses are not going to be at those protests. So you see what's going on here, right? And that's a real problem. I'm really concerned about this photo ID thing. I'm really concerned about this. This is going to be about limiting votes. And this is going to be about keeping black and brown folk and poor white people from voting and working class white people from voting and working class black people from vote. This is what this is about, because these folks know, the conservatives that is, they know that the electorate's changing and they don't like it, because their grip on power by definition is going to be loosened. That's what this is about. It's cynical as heck. Anyway, that's one story. You've got to read that story. I'll put that in the newsletter. But that's a really important story. That's number one. Number two, a story. And I'm going to say this. Did you know? I didn't even know this until today. So I'm going to pass it on to you just in case you didn't know. Did you know that the United States Supreme Court overrode President Biden's eviction moratorium? Did you know that? I did not actually know that, you know. Shows you how much I know, you know. Because I don't, you know. But I am not kidding you. I did not realize this until literally today. Where have I been spending my nights? I didn't even know this. I didn't really... My gosh. Rip Van Winkle. I don't know. Honestly, I did not know about this until literally I came across the New York Times. New York Times has a story on this. That... It was last month or late in August or early August, where this eviction moratorium was ended by the United States Supreme Court. It's like, oh my God, really? Where was I? This is really crazy. But That is something that happened. That is a thing, you know, that did there, thou, them happen. It happened. This eviction moratorium, it happened. It's stopped now by the U.S. Supreme Court. A 6-3 court. That was the ruling. A 6-3 court ruled 6-3. Six Republicans and three Democrats. And by the way, this was only five or six. This is about a week and a half ago now. A week and a half ago. This is an August 26, 2021 decision. Alabama Association of Realtors et al. Versus the Department of Health and Human Services. An application to vacate the stay. And the United States Supreme Court issued an 8-page opinion on this. And all the Republican judges, justices said, of the conservative justices said, nope, no more moratorium. It's over. You folks are going to just have to sink or swim so they can evict you now. The eviction will see you now. And the three people who said, no, this is not what you should be doing to people in this country. You call this a great country, but then you're evicting people through no fault of their own because there's a pandemic and they've been forced out of work. And instead of providing a safety net for these folks beyond the bills that have been passed in Congress, you want to throw them out. How are people supposed to pay for their rent if they've been laid off their job because of COVID? Can't find jobs because of COVID. At least for all that time, their rent pays back up, backed up. Their mortgage pays back. They don't know what. Come on, what are they supposed to do? Oh, we're going to throw you out on the street. That's what the United States Supreme Court said on August the 26th, 2021. We're throwing you out on the street. You can read that 8-page decision. I'm going to link to that on the newsletter as well. No, they don't care. And you've got a 6-3 court. And I think we need to be telling President Biden and all the other relevant parties that we need to increase the number of people in the Supreme Court. If previous Republicans in the White House have been not afraid to break laws, violate the Constitution, and do all kinds of stuff to effectuate a 6-3 outcome like you've got, like having a Supreme Court nomination hearing during an election campaign, like holding open a seat for a freaking, what, nearly a year while President Obama was in office so that you could then wait for the result that you knew was going to happen. So then you can now put in another conservative judge. If they can break those kinds of rules and do all these kinds of unholy things, what on earth are the Democrats doing? Can't the Democrats do something about this? Can't President Biden do something about this? We've got to put pressure on these folks. You can't be shouting, yay team here. I keep saying it. Yay team does not pay the rent when you're being evicted. And yay team does not do the job when your voting rights have been taken from you. And yay team doesn't do anything when women aren't able to make choices. Get my drift? So that's where we are. That I did not know. I did not know about that story. And my gosh, there you go. You learn something every day. One other thing I want to point you to, dear listener, before bidding you adieu, is to look at some of the stuff that's really going on here. Stuff that you really need to be aware of. There was Jacinda Ardern. Now, she's the Prime Minister of New Zealand. I've always often been singing her praises. And there was a stabbing in Auckland, by the way, over the last few days. Sorry for the bad news information, but it's you've got to know about this. Because Jacinda Ardern, the Prime Minister of New Zealand, had within a week and a half of the horrible terrorist attack that happened against Muslim people by this white, orange, violent terrorist in New Zealand, when he went to two mosques and killed 50 or 51 people. Within a week and a half of that or so, Jacinda Ardern, the Prime Minister, confiscated all guns, ordered there to be no assault weapons. They put a ban on everything. No assault weapons, none of this stuff, bum, 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 done. Done. And what, 51 people this guy murdered? Muslims, people who were just praying in their own holy sanctuary, in a mosque, in two different mosques in Christchurch. And this piece of garbage murdered 51 people who are worshipping. How cowardly, how evil. These persons are worshipping their faith. And you've come in there and you've murdered them. And then you put that on, you did it live on YouTube. You are dead. You are absolutely dead to yourself, mate. To do something so evil and so violent and so heinous and so cowardly. And so Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern of New Zealand responded to that. And this guy is behind bars now, the guy that did this, in 2019, I believe it was. And now there was a stabbing. So there was this person in New Zealand from Sri Lanka who actually was fighting to keep his refugee status in New Zealand. And he stabbed, I don't know how many people he stabbed. I mean, he grabbed a knife from a, this is scary stuff. Sorry for the graphics. Grabbed a knife from a supermarket shelf and attacked shoppers. And he did it just a few yards away from the very undercover police who were surveilling him. That's really disturbing as well. Seven people were hurt. I don't think anybody died, thank God. But seven people were hurt. And some of them were in critical condition. This is hard. And apparently, the person said, or there's rumors or whatever. I don't say rumors. It was IS, ISIS attack. Or inspired by, I don't know. But whatever it is, it's horrible. And ISIS or not, or, you know, whether it's some racist or not, this act of violence is heinous. And I just hope that all of the people do recover from their injuries. That's horrible. And so now she's trying to, Jacinda Ardern, the Prime Minister. Prime Minister Ardern said that her government has asked for passage of a, quote, controversial new anti-terrorism law to be sped up on the same day Friday's mass stabbing took place. And she hoped it will be passed by the end of the month. So I would love to know what I want to get more into, what this controversial bill is. You know, because if this strips away people's civil liberties, that's a problem. Tied to terrorism laws to, this is really crazy. This is really crazy stuff. Existing legislation meant the knife man, who was known to police, could not be jailed despite evidence he was planning an attack. Well, they do need to strengthen the laws. Wow. That's what was going on in New Zealand? Especially after what happened 2 years ago? Oh, dear. But anyway, that's something else I want to keep my eye on, and maybe you should too. Especially those of you in New Zealand, keep your eye on that, because that's just, whoa. They had known that this guy was, how many times have I read that, especially in the UK, the Metropolitan Police or this constabulary of police knew that this person had been doing these things, and it happens. Is it, that's the kind you feel like, did they let this happen? You knew that this guy was on your radar, you knew it, and then you waited for it to happen? Anyway, I don't know. That's just me. That's how I view this stuff. I don't know. I don't know if they let it happen. I shouldn't outwardly say that. I just wonder. I've read so many stories about this. Well, we've been aware of this person. He's been on our radar for so long, and then you don't do anything about him. But I guess as Gregory Peck said in Cape Fear, the law doesn't allow you to do something before it happens, right? You can't punish someone. Well, geez, it does allow it because it happens to us. Before we do anything, we're killed, right? You know, before a black person does anything, you know, stop us from being murdered out here. We haven't done anything. And they murder us. And then the people who do it don't get any jail time. They don't get indicted. They don't get the handcuffs on them. They get Burger King. Oh, dear. I mean, think about it. Christchurch, Charleston, South Carolina. They both begin with a C. Christchurch and Charleston. You know, nine black parishioners praying. get murdered. 51 people of the Muslim faith praying, they get murdered. I mean, hello. And it's black and brown people being murdered. And it's white men doing the murdering. And a culture doing the murdering. So we've all got to be awake to this, and we've got to do something about this, because this is not good for a society or societies. And it's not ever been good, obviously. That's putting it mildly. We have to affirm ourselves against this kind of violence. And that's one thing this cashier told me is, I have to look out, we, and she was speaking to me as two black persons speaking and to each other. She said, we have to look out for ourselves and we have to be aware of our surroundings. And that is true, especially for us. It's true of course, any human being. But in this culture and then in this society and in this system, we really, as black people, have to be. We really do have to be aware of our surroundings, around everything, constantly. Now, how does that feel to those of you who are not black, right? You've got to worry, and I know women of any racial group have to think about this, but you have to worry 24/7 about your surroundings everywhere you go, day or night. You have to worry about that if you're black, for sure, and if you're a woman, you do as well. But I just mean, think about that, though, constantly, at the workplace. You know? You've got to worry about it walking down the street. You've got to worry about it jogging, Ahmaud Arbery. You've got to worry about it sleeping, Breonna Taylor. You've got to worry about it being in your car. I can name so many people, Philando Castile, the young brother down there in up there in Minnesota who got shot by that trigger-happy cop who is going to be on trial soon. Kim, whatever her name is, I forget now. Dante Wright was the brother who was murdered by her. I can name so many people. Sandra Bland, drive my car and they pull me over because I didn't make a turn signal. I didn't actually, oh God, you know how many people don't turn signal? You don't turn signal. You don't put a signal on, some of you. I know you don't. Well, I don't know that you don't, but I've seen it every day. Right? The police don't stop them. They don't stop you. Maybe they do. Maybe they don't. I doubt it, right? You turn, you don't put your indicator light on, and you don't get a cop running after you and pulling you over. And Sandra Bland, oh, I forgot to turn my... And she's dead. You can't abide by a society like that. You can't live in a society like that and be okay with it. Can you now? Or can you? Thank you very much for listening to this edition of The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore.